Well, starting with Thanksgiving, we enter a time of year that we call the holidays. In the Christian tradition, today is the first Sunday of Advent. In the Jewish tradition, Hanukkah will begin in the evening of Tuesday, December 12th. In the Northern Hemisphere, the winter solstice will be celebrated on Thursday, December 21st. And then next will come Christmas, and then many African Americans will be celebrating Kwanzaa, a seven-day festival that begins on December 26th. And on January 1st, we will celebrate the new year, 2018. The word holidays is a shortened version of the phrase holy days. And soon we will begin singing Silent Night, Holy Night. We use the word holy a great deal at this time of year. We use the word holy as an adjective or an adverb to make something sound more important, more significant. So we have Holy Mother, Holy Father, Holy Spirit, Holy Order, Holy Church, and Holy Moly, which literally means sacred grave. Some churches have special water they call holy water. And there's the story about a man who came into the church on crutches. He stopped in front of the font of the holy water, and he reached in, and with his hands, he got the holy water, and he put it on both legs. He came in on crutches and put the holy water on both legs, and then he threw away his crutches. An altar boy witnessed the scene and ran to tell the priest what he had seen. He said, "The man put holy water on his legs and then threw away his crutches." The priest said, "Son, you've just witnessed a miracle. Tell me, where is this man now?" The boy said, "He's flat on his butt over by the holy water." Well, I don't believe in those kinds of miracles. I don't believe in magic. I don't believe in the supernatural. However, I still find the word holy useful in describing a certain kind of experience that I have in my life. Holiness to the ancient Jews was a clear idea. To be holy meant to be ritually pure. To be holy meant to be someone committed to doing nothing that the pagans did. That the Philistines wore red cloaks, ate shellfish, and ate meals of pig. Then to be holy, the Jews must refrain from wearing red, refrain from eating clams, and refrain from eating pork. This notion of purity is also found in the Islamic traditions regarding fasting and in the Christian practice of celibacy and in the traditional Hindu dietary and social taboos. In our modern life, this definition of holiness as purity finds most obvious expression in our division between the holy space inside the church and the profane space of the outside world. When I enter this room, one of you said to me, I feel the power of the space. It is somehow different from Fruitville Road outside. Here, I have seen children dedicated. I have watched my friends get married. In this room, my husband's memorial service was held. When I enter these doors, I feel that I have entered a holy place. Emphasis on purity is one definition of the word holy. A second answer to the question, what is holy, is an ethical one. Over the centuries, different religions have called special persons holy because of their great courage at living moral and ethical lives. In a sermon entitled, Be Holy, one minister said, I remember going to see the movie Gandhi when it first came out. It was the usual noisy, restless Saturday night crowd as people sat there waiting for the lights to dim with their popcorn and their soda pop, girlfriends and boyfriends with legs draped over the backs of empty seats. But by the time the movie came to a close, with the flames of Gandhi's funeral pyre filling the entire screen, there wasn't a sound or a movement in the whole theater. And the people filed out of there, the teenagers and the senior citizens, blacks and whites, swingers and squares, in a deep and telling silence. Who wants to be holy? People tasted something that at least for a few moments that Saturday night made every other kind of life seem empty. To live an ethical life, to show great moral courage, this is a second definition of the holy. A third answer to the question of what is holy is a carefully constructed theological answer concerning the encounter of the divine and the transcendent. In the year 1910, a German philosopher named Rudolf Otto took leave from his teaching and set out on a long journey. He visited North Africa, Egypt, Palestine, then traveled to India, to China, to Japan and the United States. In these visits, Otto deepened his understanding of the religions of the world. Although Otto himself was a German Lutheran, he wanted to broaden his religious experience beyond Christianity. He was searching for what is universal to all religions. In the years after he returned to Germany, Otto wrote a book. He gave it a carefully worded title, the way serious German philosophers are inclined to do. In English translation, the title is The Idea of the Holy, an inquiry into the non-rational factor in the idea of the divine and its relation to the rational. Published 100 years ago this year, in 1917, the book became a theological bestseller. The events of the First World War had shattered many assumptions of the inevitability of human progress and turned many people to a renewed quest for religious values. In his book, The Idea of the Holy, Otto attempted to describe what he believed is the distinctive element found in all religious experience. He called this distinctive element the holy. He suggested that a religiously satisfying response to the question of whether we can have knowledge of the holy is likely to be a deeply emotional response and not a rational one. Otto tried to elicit an appreciation of the holy by describing various people's intense experiences. However, he believed that there is no demonstration by argument. There is no example, no story that can substitute for the experience of the holy itself. So he wrote, "The reader is invited to direct his mind to a moment of deeply felt religious experience. As little as possible qualified by other forms of consciousness. Whoever cannot do this, whoever knows no such moments in his experience, is requested to read no further. For it is not easy to discuss questions of religious psychology with one who cannot recall any intrinsically religious feelings." Otto is contending that only when we have the experience can we understand what is meant by the holy. He defined the experience of the holy as having three elements. First, the awareness of mystery. Second, a feeling of an awe-inspiring power before which we tremble. And third, a feeling of fascination, such that we are drawn to, we are attracted to the mystery. In other words, Rudolf Otto described the holy as a blend of fear and fascination before the mystery of the universe. He said this experience is universal for all religions and is the common denominator of all religion. When I think about trembling and fascination and mystery, I remember visiting California 2 weeks after an earthquake in the fall of 1989. I arrived at that magical point when people who lived in the area were tired of hearing other people tell the story of where they had been during the earthquake. However, they were not tired of telling their story of where they had been when the earthquake struck. And I was an eager listener. One fact stood out to me. The weekend after the earthquake, the synagogues and the churches were filled with people. There were more people attending religious services that weekend than anyone could remember. It was like Christmas Eve or Yom Kippur, only bigger. What was going on? Perhaps when the earth shook, people were experiencing a need for what Rudolf Otto called the fear and fascination with the divine. First, they felt an awareness of mystery. What happened? Second, they felt a feeling of awe-inspiring power, an earthquake before which they literally trembled. And third, they felt a feeling of fascination, such that we are drawn to, attracted to the mystery. So this is a third definition of the holy. The holy is a blend of fear and fascination before the mystery of the universe. A fourth definition of the word is found in a book, The Grapes of Wrath, by John Steinbeck. It is a story of an itinerant preacher telling how he discovered his meaning for the word holy. There was the hills and there was me. And we wasn't separate no more. We was one thing. And that one thing was holy. And I got thinking, only it wasn't thinking, it was deeper down than thinking. I got thinking how we was holy when we was one thing. And mankind was holy when it was one thing. For the preacher in Steinbeck's story, the holy is an awareness of a cosmic unity. So these are four interrelated definitions of the word holy, and each of them has merit. First, to be holy can mean to be ritually pure. This is what I mean when I say this church is a holy place, separated from the profane world outside. Second, to be holy can mean to show moral and ethical courage. We speak of holy persons such as the Hindu Gandhi or the Christian Dorothy Day. Third, to be holy can mean to encounter the mystery. And this is what Rudolf Otto was thinking when he called the holy the awareness of mystery, a feeling of awe-inspiring power before which we tremble and feel fascination, such that we are drawn to, attracted to the mystery. And fourth, to be holy can mean to experience the unity in all life and in the pulse of the universe. This is what John Steinbeck meant when he wrote, "There was the hills, and there was me, and we wasn't separate no more." Well, I do not believe in speaking in tongues or in channeling spirits or in pyramid power. However, in my own life, I do experience the holy. It is present in those moments when all forms of life, including those very different from me, become my kin. When the birds and the trees become an expression of the same life force that flows through my veins, I experience the holy in moments when a sense of the unity of all things wraps around me. It starts with a feeling of distance. I first feel separate. I feel isolated. I feel detached. I experience myself as alienated and estranged from other people and the earth. And then I gradually become aware of being connected to a greater reality. It is a process of dissolving of defenses that stand in the way of my separateness. As I become aware of being connected, I feel within me an awe, a fascination, a tie to a larger realm of experience. It is like being held by an ocean and knowing that when I move, the ripples I make will move out beyond me to the edge of the Gulf waters and beyond. And that the ripples others make will move and touch me. I am aware of a great unity. As distinctions disappear, I become part of the vast, ongoing process of life. I am tied to a greater energy. I am linked to nature. I am bound to everything. This is holy. So in this season, I give thanks for the experience of the holy, those brief moments when I feel part of the vast, ongoing process of life. In the past few days, I have looked in the night sky for the light of the moon. I have watched the squirrels play here on the church grounds. I've looked at an old photograph of my grandfather. I've enjoyed the beautiful sounds of classical music. I've watched children laugh and play together. And in those brief moments, I have felt connected to something larger than myself. I experience the holy. So on this first Sunday of Advent, I invite you to join me in giving thanks for such experiences.